Welcome to this week's episode of Active Healthy Aging. I'm your host, Coach Ken. Each week, we will be discussing practical health and fitness strategies and topics to help you regain, maintain, or improve your health and movement practice. Ultimately, our goal is to empower you to create a personal movement practice that will support your activities of daily living, make you fall resistant, and living independently for as long as possible. Each week, we'll be looking at some specific topics, and the first one this week is called For Your Movement Practice Concept, How Do You Define Fitness? Well, don't be embarrassed if you aren't sure. As a fitness professional with numerous certifications, I can tell you that I've never actually been asked to define what fitness is, despite the fact that I'm considered a certified fitness professional. It's very difficult to find an accurate definition. The majority of people in our society tend to make assumptions about a person's fitness based primarily on their aesthetics. For example, they've got six-pack abs, large defined arms or legs, a lean physique, and some perhaps performance-based standards such as strength, speed, power. Then, they are considered to be fit. In truth, there are many potential elements to fitness to consider when designing your own movement practice. Ultimately, it boils down to what you personally need to be able to do to support your activities of daily living. So whether it's recreational sports, intensive gardening on a steep slope every weekend, active skiing, tennis, golf, it really is all dictated by what your levels of activity are. There's a list of some elements of fitness that you may not have considered when creating or evaluating your own fitness regimen or movement practice. So this short list, the first element would be cardiorespiratory endurance. That's just a fancy word for, do you have the endurance to work or walk vigorously for a prolonged period of time, probably over an hour. Stamina, that's the ability to work, produce force for an extended period of time, such as if you were out gardening and say you were digging for an hour or two, that would require stamina. Distinguishing that from the previous one, cardiovascular endurance, which is more of an aerobic-based thing where you're actually improving your cardiovascular function to operate at a fairly low level for a prolonged period of time in terms of breathing and heart rate. So we've got cardiovascular endurance, stamina. The next one is strength, which is pretty straightforward, although there are many types of strength. There's absolute strength, which when you watch the Olympics or powerlifting, where they're just doing one repetition with the most amount of weight that they can handle, this is considered strength, one measure of strength. Flexibility and mobility is another area which, especially for aging population, is probably, in my mind, the most critical aspect of fitness, because if you can't move the joints and fully express their complete range of motion, it really limits what you're able to do. It might be something as simple as not being able to put a box up on a shelf because your shoulders are so tight. To follow up again, flexibility is more about the tension in the muscle tissue itself. Mobility is how the joint moves in its full range of motion. And obviously, if the muscles are tight, then that's going to restrict the joint. Or if the joint itself is actually tight, the capsule is tight, then you're going to have restriction. So flexibility and mobility are huge for an aging population. Power. This is something that is underrated and underutilized, especially with older populations. It sounds scary because the definition of power is to move a heavy object as fast as possible. This is probably the most quality example of this would be Olympic lifting, where they're taking a weight, a dead weight from the floor and snatching it overhead. So it takes not just strength, but power are the muscles which allow that allow you to move that weight as quickly as possible. And for an aging person, power might just simply be the ability to produce force quick enough to broaden your base of support so you don't fall. In other words, your feet might be together. You may need to laterally step to the side quickly. That's a power movement. Or if you were cooking at the sink or at a stove, had a boiling pot of water and you accidentally tipped it and you had to jump backwards quickly. That's power. So that's the ability to move very quickly one time. Speed. Speed is relative, obviously, as we age, but it's another fitness component which is relevant. If, for example, you're watching your grandkids and you're at a park or somewhere near a busy street and you get caught in a conversation with somebody else and you look over and there's your grandchild starting to get out into the street, obviously you're going to need to get up and move quickly. So that would be a relevant form of speed training that you could practice within that context. Coordination is another element of fitness which generally doesn't get appreciated, but it's the ability to move both upper body extremities and lower body extremities in a coordinated manner, whether it's the ability to swing a tennis racket or a golf club accurately. This is all part of coordination. Agility is another element which most people don't train. We usually think of this with football players and agility ladders working on their footwork. The ability to react quickly, to change directions and so forth. So that's, and this is really something that people of all ages can and probably should be working on, is the ability to change directions quickly. Balance, of course, this is one of the big buzzwords for an aging population. And I like to define balance or categorize it into two types. We've got static balance, which is simply the ability to stand in place on one foot for at least 10 seconds as sort of a baseline and switch without having to put your other foot down. And so this can obviously be extended to standing on unstable surfaces. In the real world, it might be something as basic as being down by a river or down at the ocean and having to stand on one foot and pause briefly before you take a step up or down in a rocky situation. The other type of balance that we train or should be training is dynamic balance. And this, in my mind, is really the more important of the two. If we go back to our rocky coastal exploration of, say, the tide pools, and you're down walking around and you're hopping from rock to rock, it's the ability to hop, stick the landing, and then hop to the next rock. So it's requires not just forward and backwards stepping or hopping, it also requires lateral and even sometimes rotational movement. So all of these can be trained safely, but they're qualities that are part of that whole fitness picture. And the last element that I have on my list for fitness elements is accuracy. And this probably is more appropriate for recreational activities or sports. If you're playing pickleball or tennis or some other sport or activity that requires you to be able to accurately throw or hit something, this is where accuracy comes in. So that was a long-winded explanation of a lot of elements that most of you probably haven't ever considered when you've looked at your fitness program. But I think that everyone can benefit by incorporating most of them. So I'm going to read them through one more time without the explanation. So there's 10 of these. The first one is cardiorespiratory endurance, stamina, strength, flexibility and mobility, power, speed, coordination, agility, balance, both static and dynamic, and accuracy. Considering the above elements in your own movement practice, I offer you the following expert explanation for what it means to be fit, in my opinion. It's the ability to perform your activities of daily living, which could be sitting to stand, dressing, picking things up, walking, etc., to include recreational and sports movements safely and efficiently. So again, that definition, the ability to perform your activities of daily living to include recreational and sports movements safely and efficiently. So that concludes our movement practice concept of the week. And I want to move now to a movement practice or movement of the week that we'll be discussing on a weekly basis. And today we're just going to start with something as simple as gait or locomotion. So gait is just another word for walking, or it could also include skipping or running. And locomotion, I include actually anything that gets you from point A to point B. So it could be rowing, it could be cycling, it could be any movement that gets you from one place to another. And obviously, this is what most people associate with the term cardio exercise. Walking is arguably our most fundamental and functional movement pattern for getting from point A to point B. I think most folks can accept our historical movement roots as those that we came from hunter-gatherers, which meant they were out for prolonged periods of time on the African savanna walking, either chasing prey or finding tubers and plants that they could eat. As we age, walking is not just for transportation. It allows us to live independently. And this is another big function of this program, is to encourage people to put in the time necessary, develop a movement practice that's relevant to you so that you can live independently for as long as possible. Even if we were ultimately to acquire assistance in the form of a cane or walker, we can still get around. The current general adult guidelines for moderate intensity exercise, for example, walking, is 150 minutes each week. That's 30 minutes five times a day at an intensity where you're still able to carry on a conversation. Or, for those of you that are more active and more vigorous, the other recommendation is 75 minutes of vigorous intensity. And during those bouts of exercise, you would not be able to carry on a conversation easily. So another popular metric is working up to 10,000 steps a day using a pedometer or some of these apps that are available for our phones. And it's a good way to keep yourself honest and get a goal that's attainable for you. So that's 150 minutes of light or moderate walking each week, or 75 minutes of vigorous gait or locomotion, and or just simply measuring your walking steps, trying to work up to 10,000 steps a day. If you're able to do this outdoors, even better, as you can gain additional benefits of breathing fresh air, varying terrain options, connecting with nature, challenging your leg strength, and your dynamic balance. So obviously, those of us that are fortunate enough to live here in Curry County, we have lots of trails and lots of opportunity to be outside. But always make sure that you're working within a safe context for you. If you don't feel sure-footed yet, probably best to stay on the more groomed trails or even the sidewalk until you feel like you're ready to head out. So that concludes our movement of the week, gait or locomotion. Next week we'll be talking about level changes, and I'll explain what those are in our next program. I'm also going to be offering each week a wellness concept. And this week, what I'd like to ask you to consider is, how do you define health? And this is can be kind of a tricky situation, because some people just think it's the absence of disease. But in short, you know, if we're not sick, we must be healthy. That notion is really not very accurate. Perhaps a more expanded definition of health might include the following from the World Health Organization: a state of complete physical, mental, and social well-being, and not merely the absence of disease or infirmity. So it's really a holistic approach. When we talk about health, it's not just the numbers that they check when you go to the doctor for your vital signs or the blood work you do. It's, are you able to physically move around without pain efficiently? Do you have a good mental outlook, not suffering from depression chronically or other mental illness? And then socially, are you able to get out and mingle with your peers and do that on a regular basis to have that sense of community connection? So health being defined in those terms is a much broader, more holistic approach. I think it's important to take this very holistic approach or perspective when considering what health means to each of us. Obviously, everything we do or don't do can affect our health. What we eat, breathe in, and drink has an immediate impact on our internal systems that collectively determine our state of health. Even our thoughts have an effect upon our overall health. If you've ever had a blood pressure cuff attached to you or a heart rate monitor, and if somebody were to give you some information that either angered you or made you very happy, you would see a definite response on those vital signs. It has often been stated that most disease is a result of stinking thinking. I think I originally heard that from Dan Millman, the author of The Way of the Peaceful Warrior. And there's a lot of truth to that, that a lot of times we kind of, what's going on in our head really dictates what happens to our body ultimately, especially if it's a chronic depression or that type of thing. Finally, our physical and social environments can affect our internal health as well as our mental health, whether exposed to toxic chemicals or toxic people. It is well documented that stress, in all of its forms, plays a major role in our overall health. And everything we can do to mitigate stress in our lives, so much the better. In general, I believe that it's optimal balance of our physical, mental, and social well-being is achieved first through awareness of where we can each improve. It's not about perfection. None of us are ever going to be perfect, but frequently monitoring our overall sense of health and making adjustments accordingly, this requires some discipline and personal responsibility. Again, each of us have far more direct control over our personal health by our daily actions than we often are willing to admit. In short, my favorite quote along these lines, your body doesn't know or care what you intend to do to it. It only knows what you actually do to it. And I guess it's fitting that this show is being recorded right after our new year in 2019. And this quote of your body not knowing or caring what you intend to do, as in a resolution, it only knows each day whether you got up and actually did something. So I think that's a good quote. And to sort of segue into our wellness quote of the week, I've chosen one from the Dalai Lama, which I think is pretty profound. The Dalai Lama states that man sacrifices his health in order to make money. Then, as he ages, he sacrifices his money to recuperate his health. And I think this is worth pondering for a few moments for each of us, because we often get caught in that grind of trying to make money all the time, and in the process, oftentimes sacrifice our health, our relationships, and other things that feed into our overall health. So again, that quote, man sacrifices his health in order to make money. Then as he ages, he sacrifices money to recuperate his health. So let's not do that. Let's stay healthy and keep your money, hard-earned money. The next element that I want to touch on this show is called regeneration strategies. And that's kind of an odd word when you're talking about health and fitness for most people. They don't really think about regeneration. If you do, you probably link it more to things like sleeping is a very obvious form of regeneration that we all do every day when our body shuts down and does all of its repair work. Regeneration is the act of restoring our various physical, to include physiological and mental capabilities, back to an optimal level. Most of this occurs while we're sleeping, which underscores the importance of consistent and adequate deep sleep. And I know this is a challenge for many of us as we age. Most of us used to sleep really well and easily, and sometimes now with having to get up to urinate or just not being able to get to sleep easily, some of us become sleep deprived. So this is one of the most important aspects of regeneration, is getting plenty of deep sleep. It's probably well understood by most of you that our physical body regenerates itself constantly. Cells die and are replaced throughout our bodies every day. So what can we do to optimize regeneration of our bodies, minds, and spirits? Throughout this broadcast series, we'll look at specific regeneration strategies for optimizing our soft tissues, our muscles and tendons. We talked earlier about one of the elements of fitness was mobility and flexibility. But if that tissue is not healthy and supple, you can't stretch it and move the joints fully, then you've got restrictions, and that's going to limit what you can do. So there's some tools and some techniques that are very simple things that you can do for yourself to keep those soft tissues healthy and functioning properly. Our gut health, that's a big buzzword these days. We'll be talking about some specific strategies you can use to improve your gut health. It's been stated that the gut is really in charge of our entire immune system, which is critically important, obviously, to keeping us healthy. Also, cardiac and circulation issues, forms of regeneration for those systems. Improving bone density. So if we're have osteopenia, which is the first stages heading into osteoporosis, if we're starting to lose bone density, there's some things we can do to improve those situations. And also working on breathing mechanics. Everybody probably assumes they know how to breathe, but as a fitness professional, I can assure you that most people, especially when they're exercising, don't breathe properly when exerting, and many people are still breathing, mouth breathing throughout the day rather than using a more circular breath in through the nose and out through the mouth. Quality of life is the ultimate goal here, and there are many things each of us can do to improve our daily lives. I hope you find this information practical and beneficial. A couple of things to sort of wrap up this segment. I've taken the liberty of coming up with what I call fitness truths, half-truths, and lies. Lies might be a little strong, but it worked well. It sounds good for the dramatic effect. So one of the truth that I want to discuss or just mention this week is that, and this is a truth in my opinion, exercise is the least effective way to lose weight. I'm afraid most of us have been kind of bamboozled with this. Many people are still convinced if they strap themselves to a treadmill for an hour every day that somehow they're going to lose all the weight they need to and they're going to have optimal fitness. But it's really not the case when it comes to weight loss. Exercise is important, but 80% of it is probably what goes in your mouth in the form of foods and drinks. The half-truth, cardio machines are as effective as self-propelled bodyweight movements, in other words, running or walking for overall fitness. Well, there's no question that you can get your heart rate up on a cardio machine, especially if you're using a stair stepper or something like that, not hanging on. But not to pick on ellipticals, but I will. It's just, it's not enough impact to address bone density and really put the muscles at a working tension that's going to cross over to your daily activities of really getting out and hiking and doing other things. And our fitness lie of the week is that long aerobic sessions are necessary to lose weight. This is something that is so ingrained in our society, and it's one of my missions to hopefully open this topic up a little more later and talk about how specific metabolic training for far less time at a higher intensity is going to do you a lot more good. And finally, the last segment is a fitness fun fact of the week. So most of you have heard the term dumbbell. Where did we come up with that? Well, there's several possible explanations for the term dumbbell. Most fitness historians associate the term as it relates to being dumb or silent. Back in medieval times, church bell ringers needed to practice ringing those heavy cast iron bells in the church steeples. But they obviously couldn't use the bells with the clappers in them because if they were ringing for practice, these were very heavy. You had to be very strong to pull the rope and clang this heavy clanger and make the bell ring. So they would practice with dumbbells, which were obviously silent. They pulled on a rope attached to a dumbbell to swing it and gain the strength they needed to ring the bell appropriately eventually. Another reference to dumbbell accounts for that early strongmen and women in the 1700s used to use two of these dumbbells connected by a bar or a piece of wood and use that as for their lifting feats and strength performances. So it's sort of an odd way to get around. We've all seen dumbbells at the gym and we talk about, you know, using dumbbells, but this is the explanation that I was able to come up with for where we actually got the term. So it has deep roots in there. So as we finish up the show today, I want to remind you that you're listening to Active Healthy Aging on KCIW 100.7 on the FM dial. I'm Coach Ken, and I want to pass along our standard disclaimer at this point that the information and opinions expressed on this show are for informational and entertainment purposes only and are not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, and or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or healthcare provider regarding any medical issue you may be experiencing. Until next time, be well, be fit.